from your daily dose of climate hope, the hydrological interventions of M-Tesa. On May 7, we visited the Earth long site of M-Tesa. This one was much closer to Mombasa, so we thankfully headed out at 7:30 a.m. instead of 6. As we passed through a village down to the water's edge on an eroded red earth track, my lucky streak of avoiding the rainy season's blasts on site visit days ran out. Rain came pouring down in a brief but intense staccato of queued up droplets. We paused to wait it out under a corrugated iron shelter. As the rain began to die down, a man drove a large herd of cattle and goats along the shore. We then crossed the channel, the only water transport needed on today's much shorter access journey. It was so shallow that we disembarked from a canoe. The mud was copious as usual, but not quite as difficult to move through as at the previous day's sites. We were greeted by Athuman, the Earthlung's site forester managing operations at M-Tesa, and Bakari, the M-Tesa site lead tree production officer. Soon, we came to a field of recently planted mangroves that looked very different from the ones I had seen so far in the previous two site visit days. The mangrove seedlings here of Vicinia marina, a pioneer species, were planted on long raised hillocks. They were arranged in rows, with crabs frolicking in the little trenches separating them. A much bigger and deeper trench ran crosswise along the ends of all the rows and smaller trenches. Earthen berms separated that trench from the sandy plain we were walking on. It had taken about 100 people, hired from the local communities, a cumulative 3 solid weeks to dig these new mineral landforms. Earthlung's had arrived at the site in 2023. The first trenches and plantings were done in 2024, and more trenches and plantings were completed in 2025. There were now 15 permanent Earthlung staff at M-Tesa, and dozens more hired part-time as needed. The trenches were needed at this M-Tesa site because of the particularly acute local siltation problem. When the brackish water rose at high tide, it was unusually full of sand and silt particles, and when it receded at low tide, it left an infertile sandy layer atop the local clay mud soils. The space where we were walking, to the left of the trenches dug throughout the planting area, was so covered in sand it almost looked like a beach. Sand buildup didn't just reduce the fertility of the soils for new growth, it directly killed existing mangroves by blocking gas exchange when it covered their pneumataw for breather roots. Not all mangroves have pneumataw forms, particularly water-tolerant pioneers like Vicinia marina and Sonoracea albidu, while Siri Epstagel does not. Here at M-Tesa, the siltation was building up, with increases in sand cover on a daily basis, and even more after rainfall. To some extent this is a natural process, but lately it's become excessive and a threat to some mangrove ecosystems. Poor agricultural practices inland, like tilling land on steep hillsides without building terraces to reduce erosion, have made the silt problem gradually worse. Climate disruptions can bring the situation to a crisis point. The 1997-98 El Nino event had washed out a lot of extra silt to this area, which had killed a lot of mangrove trees. The plan behind the trenches in this area was for the newly planted mangrove seedlings to grow in the hillocks richer clay soil dug up to make the trenches, avoiding being smothered by the sand deposition. Over the years, the trenches would silt up with sand again, but that should take a while. The biggest one is 2 feet deep. By then, the mangroves would be mature trees happily sequestering carbon and helping hold non-sand sediments and soil in place. This wasn't done haphazardly. There's a lot to consider before any trenching activity or mangrove cultivation. Suleiman discussed with me the Earthlung's process when arriving at a new potential restoration site. Standard protocol was to do a vigorous site assessment. Talk to locals about which species were previously there and the general biophysical history of the site. Check the biophysical factors, the still existing species, and where they were living. Measure the height and size of any trees present. Answer questions. What is the salinity in this area? For example, Suleiman told me that during one pre-planting site inspection, Earthlung's had found wild Sonoracea alba, white mangrove, strangely high up and far from the water's edge, outside its usual zonation. Further inquiries revealed that this patch had indeed once been a regularly flooded zone, but the channel through which the high tide returned had been blocked by silt, exacerbated by fallen trees accumulating more silt and acting as dams. What are the exact patterns of tidal influx and outflux in the local terrain? How does the water move from where into where? This can be highly valuable. Next, we went to view a potless nursery section, where propagules were grown into more mature transplantable seedlings for the rest of the M-Tesa site. You could just push the embryo, like propagules, into the soil, separated by 15 centimeters, then let them grow and later a core tool to pick them up as ready to transplant seedlings. This was a relatively new part of Earthlung's operations, now being trialed in an effort to reduce plastic use. Athuman told me that local children now come to catch the fish left by the last high tide in the trench around the potless nursery. Sometimes flamingos drop by to fish there as well, as it was only the second reforestation site Earthlung's had done work at, starting in 2023. We were to visit the first site, Majani, the next day. It was the first site where they'd partnered with the Veritree monitoring and verification platform. Athuman and Bakari proudly explained the process. The on-site staff do level 1 verification. Yep, what I just wrote down is correct. Off-site Earthlung staff do level 2 verification. Yep, what those guys put in the system is correct, and the Veritree platform does level 3 verification. Yep, this latest update from our Earthlung's looks correct. W. If a range of technological verification options, including satellite imagery. The Earthlung's site manager or monitoring officer uploads data on how many trees they've planted, their locations, their species, and in the course of time their survival rate, using geotagged photos as proof. Standing in front of the potless nursery, I asked Athuman about his favorite part of working for Earthlung's. Without hesitation, he replied the social impact. When Earthlung's came to this M-Tesa site in 2023, much of the surrounding community was jobless, mainly spending their time fishing or cutting trees for charcoal. The income brought by Earthlung's regular industry of mangrove planting allowed parents to pay their kids' school fees and save money for the future. People learned about the importance of mangroves to the ecosystem. Contents of that fund can be loaned out to any Earthlung staff that would like to borrow money at very low interest rates, helping empower people to make financial decisions without resorting to loan sharks. And elsewhere on the M-Tesa site, too far to walk today, There were recently built bee hives as part of the Beyond Trees program to ensure that communities employed by Earthlung still had non-deforestation income generating options once restoration work was complete. Tree cutting has spontaneously reduced, presumably thanks to both the education and the new income flow option. Earthlung even has an in-house welfare system for employees, where every month all staff have the option to contribute some small amount of money to a common fund. Even in 30 or 50 years, the community will still benefit from this project. We then discuss the biophysical relationships, verging on symbiosis, between mangrove trees and the invertebrates of the mudflats. The omnipresent crabs have a nuanced effect. They will frequently eat mangrove propagules and crab PR.